Hello and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, exclusive interviews with leading experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes of clinical trials, research, and innovation. I'm your host, Lauren Buchanan. In today's episode, Dr. James Song of Seattle, Washington shares a guide to what's new, what's now, and what's next in atopic dermatitis treatment. He will highlight the challenges of transitioning patients from topical to systemic therapies and what that treatment plan could look like. And of course, he explains the emerging biologic therapies targeting IL-31 and OX40 pathways.
I'm James Song. I'm a dermatologist in Washington State. I practice at Frontier Dermatology, and I serve as our chief medical officer and the director of clinical research. One of the primary challenges in treating atopic dermatitis is that we actually have a lot of good options. It's just getting patients on those medications. And some of that could be access, in that patients don't maybe have insurance companies that will pay for some of these medications. But it's also getting them comfortable graduating from a topical therapy to a systemic therapy. Sometimes that could be a pretty big jump for some people. And just like we see with many other diseases, oftentimes even prescribers are waiting too long before they have the conversation about starting a systemic therapy. And you can have patients with fairly limited skin disease, but if their itch is really high or their atopic dermatitis is affecting their quality of life in a meaningful way, those patients deserve systemic therapy as well. And I'm convinced that if we could get them on some sort of systemic therapy, the vast majority of these patients are going to have some type of meaningful improvement. It's just a matter of getting them on that systemic therapy that's been the challenge. So, I mean, we're really living in a golden era for atopic dermatitis. We have two really good biologics, two great oral JAK inhibitors, and overall they work very, very well. Some key differences, though, is that with the oral JAK inhibitors, they do work more quickly. We've seen that pretty consistently with both JAK inhibitors when they were compared against our biologics. They're also able to get to a higher level of response when it comes to skin clearance as well as itch reduction. So the EASI-90 and the NRS-01 was better for our oral JAK inhibitors. The challenge, though, is with the JAK inhibitors, you have to get blood monitoring. There is a boxed warning that maybe some patients and prescribers may not feel comfortable talking about. And there are some other safety concerns that we can see with oral JAK inhibitors, particularly in patients who have risk factors. Now, there are groups of patients that I do think might do better with JAK inhibitors from the very beginning, right? So that doesn't mean you have to go through a biologic first before you go on to a JAK inhibitor. For example, if a patient has predominantly maybe head and neck eczema, or eczema on the hands and feet, I found that JAK inhibitors may work better than patients who are doing on biologics. Or if patients maybe have predominantly itch, but their skin disease isn't that bad, I've also found that JAK inhibitors may work better for those patients as well. If you look at the International Eczema Council, it does give us some guidance about when we should consider escalating to systemic therapy. So first, you want to look at whether this patient's a moderate to severe patient. Because if they are moderate to severe, they deserve to go on a systemic therapy. And there's different definitions of moderate to severe. We've often relied on the body surface area. So if you're over 10% palm prints, that's a moderate to severe patient. But certainly also the location of where the eczema is affecting. If it's on your hands, your face, your private inverse areas, those patients we generally will move more quickly to a systemic therapy. And as I mentioned before, if their eczema is affecting their quality of life in any meaningful way and they fail, let's say, an aggressive regimen of topical steroids, and it's not enough to control their disease, that patient should go on to a systemic therapy as well. And once you decide on systemic therapies, you got to decide, you know, which one am I going to go? Is it going to be the oral agents? Is it going to be the injectables? And that's going to depend on patient preferences. Some prefer to take a pill. Some prefer a shot. Also, what's their health history look like? What is the insurance going to cover? These are all important things that we have to factor in. So atopic dermatitis is a far more heterogeneous disease than, let's say, psoriasis. We know that based on someone's age, their race, their genetic profile could be quite different. And what that means is that not everyone responds very well to the same medication. So we need to have more drugs with different mechanisms of action. So the two biologics that are going to get close to approval is one is called nemolizumab. This is an IL-31 inhibitor. This is a very important itch cytokine, as well as an inflammatory cytokine. And we saw the phase 3 data, looks very promising. But also, there's another pathway we call OX40 or OX40 ligand. There are two medications that block one of those components individually. And what we've seen with those medications is that once we get patients to clear, we can really stop the medication, and these patients stay clear for a long time. So potentially these type of medications could modify the course of someone's disease. One of the main concerns about our oral JAK inhibitors has been the safety from the very beginning. It has a box warning, and for some people, it could look very scary. I'm sorry, I'm looking at this. I should be looking at you. I'll do that again. One of the concerns for oral JAK inhibitors has been the safety. There are a lot of scary things on the box warning, so understandably, some people are hesitant to use it. But what we've seen in the real world from using these medications in patients with atopic dermatitis or alopecia areata is that the safety data actually looks very, very reassuring. And I, you know, candidly would say it's better than advertised, especially in patients that aren't sick, that are not on other immunosuppressants, like our rheumatoid arthritis patients where that box warning came from.
And for more insightful Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos and podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com and be sure to subscribe to our print publication and email newsletters. Have a great day.